Blog Talk Radio.
That is my cue, everyone. Welcome. You're listening to This Week in Oncology on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the producer and co-host of the show, known to some on Twitter as 2HealthGuru. And joining me, as always, in the virtual booth is my partner, co-host, Richard Jest, Dr. Richard Jest, whose Twitter handle is @chemosabe, the number one. So welcome, Rich.
Well, thanks, Greg. Glad to be here again.
I'm glad that you could make it, knowing what you're up against these days. So let me tell you that This Week in Oncology is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model. And joining us today for an encore appearance is our special guest, medical oncologist Edward McClay, MD. Dr. McClay is a nationally recognized leader in melanoma treatment and clinical research. Born and raised in Philadelphia, he served as a staff sergeant in the U.S. Air Force, receiving both his BA and MD degrees from Temple University, graduating in 1980. He completed a residency in internal medicine and a fellowship in medical oncology at Thomas Jefferson University, where he was subsequently appointed to the faculty as assistant clinical professor. Dr. McClay has held several positions in academic medicine, including associate professor and medical director at the Medical University of South Carolina Hollings Cancer Center, professor of medicine, and director of clinical affairs at the University of California San Diego Cancer Center. So with that, by way of a brief intro, Rich, over to you.
Thanks, Greg. Welcome again, Ed.
Well, thanks for having me again, Richard. I enjoy the opportunity to participate in this forum with you.
Well, I'm really looking forward to today because, as we discussed, I was trying to get to ASCO myself but couldn't make it because of other obligations. And you were able to make it, and especially in your field, the amount of information coming out about melanoma has been staggering. So, well, that's somebody calling me.
I don't know if
you can hear the phones. I wonder if you could bring us up to date about the recent ASCO meeting, specifically about melanoma new knowledge that you gleaned from that conference.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So but in the introduction, they talked about me graduating in 1980, so that gives folks a little bit of an idea of how old I am. And unfortunately, I'm old enough to remember going to the melanoma meetings in previous ASCOs and having me and 10 or 12 or 15 other folks. So there was very little going on and very little interest. In many of the presentations this year, there were thousands of people in there, so lots of neat stuff going on. We're going to try to break it into sort of two segments, and the first, and it's based upon the fact that there are sort of two different approaches that are really seem to be working well now, and we're trying to figure out which is going to be the best way to go. The first has to do with the fact that we have gained an awful lot of knowledge in what we refer to as signal transduction pathways. And basically that means that if a cell needs to make a new cell, there has to be some signal for that to happen. And then that signal, in some way, has to get to the cell, wind up stimulating the nucleus and resulting in the making of a whole new cell. And we've learned that there are a number of those different pathways, but in some of the cancer patients, there seem to be a select few of these pathways that are mutated, sort of thinking about mutated in the on position, like you walk into the room and you turn the light on, the light doesn't go out until you turn it off. Well, that's similar kind of switch in these situations, and unfortunately, in these cancer cells, these cells are mutated with this switch in the on position. So the cell just keeps replicating itself. Doesn't have to do it quickly, but it just does it uncontrolled. And so as we've learned that, we've begun to learn the different components of those pathways. And in melanoma patients, we found out that there's a particular mutation in a pathway that's called the MAP kinase pathway, MAP kinase. And the second enzyme in that pathway, is mutated in the on position. It's referred to as BRAF. And so having started my melanoma research career back in the early 1980s, there were only two medicines approved between 1980 and 2011, and neither of those medicines worked very well for melanoma patients. In 2011, we had the first of what we referred to as BRAF inhibitors, and that was Zelboraf, a product of the Genentech company. And Zelboraf was basically an inhibitor of this pathway, and it was able to get into the cancer cells and would simply set on this enzyme and turn it off. And we found out that was very effective. And if you look at all melanoma patients, about 50% of them will have a mutation in this gene. So now one of the first things you do when you meet a patient with melanoma who has evidence of metastatic disease is you have to know what their BRAF status is, because you're going to start selecting medicine on the basis of the molecular changes. So that's a big change for us, and that shows that these sort of designer drugs and personalized medicines are we're just beginning to get into this area. But we knew that if this was mutated, that we had a very high response rate. So Zelboraf was used in patients. We had about a 50-55% response rate, and most of the patients would have that response last for between 6 and 9 months. Unfortunately, it wasn't curative, but it brought patients good time, and there were some side effects associated with it, but for the most part, reasonably manageable. That particular approach has been working really, really well, but of course there's lots of competition. And so about a year, maybe a year and a half ago, I guess, a second of the BRAF inhibitors came out just about at the same time that we also had a MEK inhibitor. And so this pathway starts out with the RAS gene, and it goes RAS, RAF, MEK, ERK, and then the signal from ERK is the signal that goes into the nucleus and starts cell division. So the thought was that if we block one of those enzymes, we know that it works about 50% of the time. And so what would happen if you blocked two of them? And so that's where the MEK inhibitors come in. So another company, GlaxoSmithKline, came out with both a MEK inhibitor and the BRAF inhibitor, both at the same time. But initially they were approved for use as single agents. And it didn't make a lot of sense to me because we knew the combination was so much better, but that's the only way that it was approved. Now we have the combination approved, and with the combination of those two medicines together, the response rate has gone from about 50% up to about between 70 and 75%. And the survival, the median survival, meaning how long half the patients live, has gone from about 5 to 6 months out to about 10 to 11 months. So that was a big change for us, and that whole approach has really changed the lives of a whole bunch of patients. And what it does is it provides us with an opportunity to give patients hopefully an improved length of life, but also hopefully improving their quality of life. And so that combination is working fairly well. Now, what was new at ASCO was that they updated some of the data that we had from those trials. The first trial was reported and resulted in the approval of this medication was what we refer to as a randomized phase 2 trial. And that particular program was reported on again. They sort of updated the numbers for us and basically demonstrated that, in fact, we were continuing to see this improvement in survival. So the combination of what's referred to as Tafinlar and Mekinist, those are the sort of the trade names, those two agents, both of which, by the way, are pills. They're both oral agents. So the combination of those two medicines is working very well. So what we've seen is the response rate has stayed about the same, where you have about 70-75% of the patients responding. while the median duration is about, again, 10.5 to 12 months, one of the things that we've seen is that was the old data. The new data is suggesting that this may actually be going out to almost 2 years. So a substantial improvement in overall survival. In fact, if you happen to achieve a complete remission on one of these medicines, 83% of the patients are alive 2 years later. Now, as you know, Richard, that's pretty remarkable. The median survival for these patients used to be between 6 and 12 months. And while we have a long way to go, a 24-month survival, 83% of the patients there are doing pretty well. In fact, even if you just get a partial response, which means at least 50% of your disease goes away, 54% of those patients are still alive at 2 years. So pretty impressive numbers.
Right.
And that has resulted in a substantive change in how we proceed with these folks. So other companies are now looking at these types of medicines and are trying to come out with similar medicines. In addition, we know that about 20% of patients will have a mutation in that very first enzyme, the RAS enzyme. And so there's now a new medicine that has looked at blocking that, so the very first of the enzyme cascade. And not approved yet, but there's a new medicine looking at that particular approach. And the early data suggests that there's about a 33% response rate. So a situation where we are garnering new medicines, working down sort of the pathway in this particular cascade of enzymes that is responsible for the at least 50 to 60% of patients with melanoma having this malignant change. So that was pretty exciting.
Right. It sounds like an analogy is the same thing that's happening with myeloma, where all these new agents that come out are sort of like mixed and matched with pre-existing drugs, and all sorts of new combinations are coming out, and everybody's trying to figure out what order we should give these drugs and what combinations work the best. So we're right on the cusp of that with melanoma.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It is now, we now have some good agents. How do you put them together? And recognize that these medicines we've been speaking about, these are the what we refer to as targeted agents. These are not the standard chemotherapy approaches that we've used. These are all designer drugs, so to speak, that have been rationally designed to fit into different areas of enzymes and turn them off. So whether or not there will be benefit by adding chemotherapy to these compounds remains to be seen. And, of course, we'll talk a little bit in just a few minutes about the fact that they are now trying to combine these agents with immunotherapy, which is what really, I think, probably caused the most excitement in ASCO. And you have to go back, unfortunately, again, to those of us that are old enough, recognizing that back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, there were these very early attempts to try to make the immune system effective in terms of killing cancer cells. And early on, the attempts were met with continued frustration. Some of the early attempts were using things like C. parvum or BCG, which were basically organisms trying to stimulate the response of the immune system to attack cancer cells. And that sort of went back to Cooley's toxins. And Richard, you remember Dr. Cooley was a surgeon back in the early part of the turn of the century, the last century. And he had made an observation with a young girl who had a very large aggressive sarcoma growing on her leg. And what happened was that tumor broke down the skin, became infected, and she became very ill. Of course, this is pre-antibiotic era kind of things. And she became very ill, very high fevers. And lo and behold, not only did she recover from the infection, but the tumor actually regressed. And he recognized that it was had to have been some effect to the immune system. And he actually began injecting patients with these organisms trying to stimulate the immune response. So that was the earliest attempt at the immune response in trying to make that successful against the cancer cells. So you sort of fast forward now back to that, to this in the 1960s, 1970s, BCG came out, C. parvum came out, and again bacterial stimulation of the immune system. Very nonspecific, and hoping you get sort of a bystander effect. The immune system's not really going for the cancer cell, but it happens to be there and it gets killed anyway. So those kinds of things worked a little bit. We've known for decades that on occasion a melanoma patient would spontaneously have their disease disappear with no treatment. And, of course, we all believed that that was the immune system that was doing it. And so those kinds of little sort of crumbs of bread that kept those of us interested in the immune system, they would tantalize us and say, well, we just don't know how to make this work yet, but it will eventually work. And so many, many people have spent decades in the labs studying the immune system, trying to figure out where the switches are that need to be turned on or off. So we had early on in the melanoma world, we had interleukin-2, which came out a number of years ago. Very modest response rates, but not zero, and a few patients cured every once in a while, but fairly toxic. We had interferon come out, which did not work very well in patients with metastatic disease. There seemed to be some benefit in the preventive setting, patients who were at high risk for melanoma to come back, trying to see if you could prevent that from happening. It didn't work nearly as much as we wanted it to, but there were some indications there. And so both of those medicines were approved back in the 90s for melanoma patients, but never really caught on just because they weren't terribly effective and were somewhat toxic. So now what we've learned is that there are new targets that we can go after as these folks have completed their basic science studies on how the immune system works. And we now recognize that there are cells that we refer to as regulatory cells. Those are the cells that sort of turn the immune system on or off. I mean, you can sort of think of this. If you get some sort of an infection, you certainly want your immune system turned off, and you want it to go and take care of whatever it is that you're fighting against. But at some point, once it's done that, it has to be shut down, and so there has to be some turn-off things. And so we didn't know what they were, but a lot of research has gone into that to try to figure out what those specific molecules are all about. The other part of it was if you had to say to yourself, if the immune system can kill cancer cells, how the heck did I ever get this cancer in the first place? Why didn't my immune system take care of it at the beginning? And we think that at least part of that answer has to do with what we refer to as low zone tolerance. And basically what that means is if you take something, an antigen, a target for the immune system, one that's not very irritating, and give that to a patient, and give it to them in very low doses for a very long period of time, not only do you not react against it, you actually prevent yourself from reacting against it. And this basically is the sort of the science behind allergy shots. You're doing basically right. The same thing. So as it turns out, that the reason you didn't respond is you developed what we used to call T suppressor cells, which are now called T reg cells, and basically they are regulatory cells that prevent your immune system from going after that tumor. So the first thing that happened was, again, back in 2011, some folks had noticed that one of the molecules on these T-reg cells was a molecule called CTLA-4. And some enterprising folks made antibodies against that and began clinical trials to treat patients. And that resulted in the ultimate approval of a medicine trade name Yervoy, but what we call ipilimumab, or IPI for short. And it turns out that this particular molecule, what's that?
Yeah. Thank you for shortening it up.
Yeah, exactly. It turns out that what this medicine would do, the antibodies would bind to this molecule on the T-reg cells, and they would basically be taken out of the circulation for a few weeks by the immune system. What you did is you then removed the brakes off the immune system, so to speak, and allowed the immune system now to go after what was bad, and in this case, obviously, tumor cells. So we've learned that IPI or Yervoy works fairly well It doesn't work as well as we'd like it to. There are some modest toxicities associated with it, but we found that we could treat patients with just four doses of this medication, one dose every 3 weeks for four doses, and that we could improve the survival of patients with melanoma. So in a group of patients who at 1 year you would expect to have maybe 6 to 12% of those patients alive, at 4 years you had 25% of them alive. So that was a big hit, because that was now really good data that you could substantially improve survival of patients by stimulating the immune system. And so we call this Yervoy molecule a checkpoint inhibitor. Now, it turns out that obviously there's more than one target. And one of the things that we recognized is that in some cases you could enhance the immune system and get the immune cells to target to the tumor and traffic into the tumor, and you could do biopsies of this tumor and see all of these immune cells in and around the tumor cells, and then you'd also see a bunch of them dying. And it turned out that there were molecules on the tumor cells, among other places, that actually could kill immune-activated cells. And we now call at least that what we refer to now as the PD-L1, programmed death ligand 1. And that's present on the tumor cells, and that being present there can actually result in the destruction of an immune-activated cell that's coming along to try to kill. So you get the sense that these cancer cells are not just sitting there waiting to die. They have developed significant ways of protecting themselves against a variety of things, including the immune system. So right now there are a number of these PD-1 checkpoint inhibitors that are in clinical trials, and we were updated on some of the data regarding those compounds. So the first thing I'll tell you about is the IPI data. IPI came out, or Yervoy came out, as a potential for a preventive setting. So we have this adjuvant situation where you have high-risk patients and you treat them to try to prevent the disease from coming back. And they used ipilimumab in that setting. Now, the dose and the schedule was a lot different than how it's approved now, so we'll have to see how that all ferrets out. But at least at this point, there appears to be a 9-month improvement in progression-free survival for high-risk melanoma patients who are treated with ipilimumab or Yervoy. So very interesting data that the immune system modulators may be useful in the setting of preventing melanoma from coming back. Now, in the metastatic setting, there was a lot more information about these PD-1 inhibitors. And so we had a combination of, first of all, I'll tell you about the nivolumab, which is a compound that is a PD-1 inhibitor, was tried in as a single agent by itself in patients who had not been previously treated. So if you remember with the IPI, we're probably looking at response rates in the 20% range, but nice survival. With nivolumab, we had 46% of the patients responding to this particular program. So that was a pretty interesting situation where we now see a marked increase in the response rate. Now, when they looked at overall survival, the median survival was about 17 months. 63% of the patients were alive at 1 year. 48% of the patients were alive at 2 years. Again, a remarkable result for patients who you'd expect to have maybe 2 or 3% alive at 2 years. We've got almost 50% of them alive. So that new molecule, that new PD-1 inhibitor, seems to be better than IPI, which goes after a different molecule. Well, if you've got one and you've got another one that worked differently, why don't you put them together? And so that's what they've done. So they've done a combination of nivolumab plus ipilimumab. And this is where the information is really seeming to be very impressive. In this situation, relatively small study so far, but in this situation, really remarkable results. What they're seeing is, again, a situation where there's about a 40 to 50% response rate. But 85% of the patients were alive at 1 year. That's the first huge. So that went up from 60 to 85, from 63 to 85. So a 22% improvement of the number of patients alive at 1 year. What was very interesting about this is that at least 80% of the patients exhibited at least an 80% reduction in their tumor. So this wasn't, you know, just sort of minor responses that we see and slowing the disease down from growing. 80% of the tumor was disappearing in 80% of the patients.
Wow.
So very, very dramatic results.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's pretty impressive. There was no evidence either. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to switch from the immunotherapy line of thinking, unless you've got a lot more to cover, to the stem cell research idea. And I know you're a big fan of intralesional therapy, too. And
right.
Maybe we can say a few words about each of these topics.
So let's talk about the stem cell stuff. So it would appear that in many cases, cancer may be a stem cell disease. And basically what that means is that it's a very primitive cell, and that cell is responsible. That's the malignant cell that results in tumor progression. And it's probably the cell that is responsible for our failure when we treat patients. As it turns out, that these cells represent a very small subpopulation in any tumor. There's only maybe 1 or 2% of the tumors, the cells in the tumor are these stem cells. But they're the reason we fail. We can't kill them. So Dr. Maynard Herlin at the University of Pennsylvania identified the fact that these cells have a particular molecule called CD20. CD20 is also found on B lymphocytes and is the target of a well-established medicine that you know very well called Rituxan that we've all been using for years in treating with lymphoma patients. Well, if we can target the stem cell and truly kill it and wipe it out, tumors are eventually going to die out. They have no cells to replenish them. So with the kind support of the folks at Genentech, we are going to open the first anti-melanoma stem cell program of this type. We will actually be targeting our therapy against these stem cells. We just had formal approval. We just ordered drug, and I expect that hopefully within the next 1 to 2 weeks, we will actually begin treating our first patient. So lots of enthusiasm about that. Theoretically, if you can kill cancer stem cells, you can cure cancer. And so that's what we're hoping comes out of this. That's a big hope, obviously, as you know. The other thing you talked about.
But it's got science behind it.
Yeah, lots of science. Lots of good
it.
Science.
Right.
Exactly. So the last thing we'll touch on is this issue of intralesional agents and approaches. And basically what that means is trying to stick things into the tumor to see if you can stimulate the immune response. For years, as you know, Richard, I have been injecting tumors with interleukin-2, and we have a fairly good response rate. Some folks have developed a virus. This virus is of the herpes virus family, which is what causes cold sores. And basically what they did was they designed this virus to infect primarily cancer cells and to secrete a product called GM-CSF, which is an immune system activator. In the early study, this particular approach has been associated with a 26% response rate, with about 11% of the patients going into complete remission. We are actually going to be part of the next series of studies where we will combine this approach with a PD-1 inhibitor. In fact, we're going to be combining it with one of the what appears to be the most effective of these PD-1 inhibitors now. So we will be opening that trial hopefully within the next few months with the opportunity to treat patients who have disease that is accessible, treat patients that you can inject directly with this material. So lots of very exciting data coming out in the melanoma world, but it's also going to expand to other treatments. The PD-1 inhibitors look like they're active in lung cancer, and we're going to start looking at them in all the other cancers.
Well, it's amazing. I don't have to go to ASCO anymore. I can the amount of information that you've given me will see me through the following year at least.
Well, we could have gone on. It's saying we don't have more time.
You're right. That's what Greg and I are sort of commenting to each other. But I'm afraid we do have to stop now because our half hour is up, unfortunately. And thank you very much for reporting in on these very exciting times, especially in melanoma. And after so many years of nothing, all of a sudden we've had an oasis.
And there you go. That'll have to be the last word. Thank you, Dr. McFlagg. Thank you, Dr. Judge. You can listen to
All right, thank you, guys.
This Week in Oncology on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Greg Nancer saying
bye.
Bye,
Greg.
All right, take care.
Take care.